Coming up, have you ever worried that a giant competitor is going to separate you from your users? Well, it happened to today's guest. Wait till you see how he grew his business after it did and what you might be able to do to grow your business. Also, when you hear my first set of questions around revenue with today's guest, if you feel like, oh, that Andrew didn't push enough, I want you to watch to the very end because I think that last set of questions is going to put a smile on your face. Finally, what's Hilo and should you lock your name on that site before someone else does? All that and so much more coming up. Three messages before we get started. First, do you need a single phone number that comes with multiple extensions so anyone who works at your company can be reached no matter where they are? Go to grasshopper.com. It's the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love. Next, does anyone you know need a beautiful online store that actually increases sales but is easy to set up and manage? Send them to shopify.com. The platform that top online stores are running on right now. Finally, do you need a lawyer who actually understands the startup world that you and I live in? Go to walkercorporatelaw.com. I've known Scott Edward Walker for years, so tell him you're a friend of mine and he'll take good care of you. Here's the program. Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. What happens when a developer builds a successful company on Twitter and then gets blindsided by Twitter? Noah Everett built TwitPic into the most popular way to share photos on Twitter. In my last interview with him, we made headlines all over the tech world when he announced that his company generated over $1.5 million a year and that he was offered well over $10 million for his company. All that for a bootstrap company, and he told his story in his last interview. Since then, Twitter built photo sharing into its product, competing directly with Noah using one of Noah's competitors. Noah's response? Well, you're going to hear about it today, including how he launched Hilo, which is kind of like Twitter in that it enables conversations, but also has some features that Twitter does not have. So I want to hear about Hilo. I want to hear about what happened to TwitPic, and I want to hear about what happened to Noah since then. Noah, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Andrew?
So, top of the world last time, now is the bottom falling out, and now you guys are dead, or something different?
Well, if you read the blogs, you'd think that. But no, actually, things are great. I think it's been about 2.5 years since our last interview, and had a great time doing that. And no, actually, things have been great. So, just to kind of follow up, I think our last interview, I think we had around 6 million users on TwitPic, and now we're past 35 million. And we have our own mobile apps out now for iPhone and Android, and they're doing very well. Kind of shifted our focus from not relying solely on third-party developers to integrate our services, but to provide an experience to our users directly on those platforms.
What about revenue?
Revenue did great. We actually did double our revenue since we last spoke, and our usage also skyrocketed as well. I think our peak years were around 2011. And so what to kind of go into with what Twitter launching their own server. And let me brief preface too. Twitter's a great platform. It's a great company. There's a great bunch of people that work there too. So there's no animosity like some would say there is. Because obviously look at what Twitter's created. So we actually didn't find out about Twitter launching their photo service until I read about it on the tech blog. So we were kind of, blindsided. We would have appreciated a heads up maybe, a few months beforehand. So maybe we could, kind of pivot a little bit or stuff like that. People said it was going to kill us, but we really didn't really diminish at all. We kind of shifted from our page views kind of translated to API calls, and in fact, we're seeing the most API usage ever on TwitPic right now, doing over a 500 million API calls a day on TwitPic.
So wait, when you say revenues double, you mean last year, 2011, revenues were 3 million?
Yeah, approximately, yes.
Approximately. Yeah. Now, when you say you were blindsided, MG Siegler at TechCrunch said that your competitors were told that Twitter was talking to PhotoBucket, but you weren't, right?
Yeah, correct. I think we contacted them on that just to kind of correct that, because we didn't know. And like I said, we understand that Twitter controls the platform. And
is it because you were small that you were – one of the things that I admired about you in the last interview, and so many people in the audience were drawn to your story, is one aspect of it was – it was a small bootstrap operation that built something big, you know, that it felt like one guy with a vision, with a passion for building it, and then a small team that coalesced around that vision could take on the world. Is that, do you think, what scared Twitter away from partnering up with you the way they partnered with PhotoBucket?
It could be. I don't know. Like, we didn't really take the traditional route of, you know, VC funding and having that certain structure set up, or the, you know, being based in the Valley. So I don't know. Could be. I guess we'll never really know.
Okay.
But in the end, I mean, things have still worked out great for us. And like, TwitPic grew so fast. It was the first company I ever started. It's like trying to drive an oil tanker by yourself, you know. You just kind of have some bumps and stuff like that. Let me turn the dimness back up. I've learned a lot in the past 2.5 years. Like I say, it's probably the best business school to go through, you know, through the highs and the extreme lows. And that's one thing I think founders should learn when they start their company. There's going to be really, really great days. You're on top of the world. The next day, you're going to feel like, you know, you only want to get out of bed, you know.
And you talked openly last time about that. You said, hey, there were times when, even back before Twitter competed with you, where it felt like things were just falling apart and your customers were upset with you and Twitter seemed unhappy with you. And you had to find a way to get yourself back up. So let's go back and just hear what life was like just before Twitter made this change. The integration happened on June 1st, 2011.
Yeah, like I said, things were great. We were seeing some of our highest numbers ever. And I read about it on the tech blogs. That's how we kind of found out.
You wake up one morning and you see the horror that many entrepreneurs have, which is your whole business changes overnight without you having any say-so.
Oh yeah, man, there's definitely, my heart sank, you know, and you kind of got that cold feeling kind of come over, you know, and then, you know, you kind of sit back and take everything in, and obviously you hope for the best but prepare for the worst, you know. And so you kind of have to ignore what the blogs write when stuff like that happens, you know, because obviously they're trying to generate page views and some of the...
What goes on in your head when that happens?
When I first started TwitPic, any negative review I read or saw, it really, really affected me. You know, I'm a fairly wear my heart on the sleeve kind of person. Over time, I've learned to take it for what it is, you know, and understand that their mechanism for making money is getting readership. And sometimes the titles or the content used, you know, can not be in the best light or use exaggerated terms just to get those page views. And I understand that. But the thing is, my mom uses this term. kind of like, you know, the dogs keep barking, but the train keeps on going kind of thing. You know, it doesn't really matter in the end, you know. It matters is that you're satisfying your users.
Able to snap back that quickly? No. There was a period where you were doubting yourself, wasn't it, that day? Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I mean,
no.
It's up and down all the time in your mind sometimes trying to figure out. What I usually do is in the mornings, I'll get up, grab some coffee, I get in my car, and I do about a 30-minute loop around Charleston, over the islands, and kind of just enjoy, you know, the scenery and kind of get my mind clear. And the key is to keep that vision in front of you at all times, because there's things on others all sides of you trying to pull you away or get your attention on this. And in the
what
end,
was that vision?
Well, my vision with TwitPic is building the best photo sharing site possible, and doing it, you know, in a way where we never lost our honor or integrity, and running a business where you can sleep good at night, you know. And that vision kind of morphed, and I guess we'll talk more about that here in a minute, you know, into Hilo and that whole thing.
I see. So you're saying the thing that brought you back to sanity, that kept you from freaking out over what happened with Twitter, is that you said, I am building a great photo sharing site. It's not about Twitter integrating me or my competitors. I'm just going to build the best site that I can. And if I do, then people will partner with me and users will want to come onto my service.
Exactly. And we had the benefit of being the first photo sharing site out there for a couple of years. And also the brand TwitPic, it's kind of like the Kleenex of tissue, you know, no matter what service a user uses to post a photo to Twitter, it's usually referred to as a TwitPic. So that brand recognition is great for us. And plus the celebrities it uses, like Katy Perry and Lady Gaga and a slew of others, kind of help us with some staying power.
What about the idea that when you have some money in the bank, you have security that keeps you from worrying about being tossed out of your house, about not being able to pay your employees. What impact did that have?
So this, I get this from my father. My father always instilled in me from an early age to never get into debt. And if you do have, you know, bills you got to pay, make sure that you can pay those bills with the minimum amount of money or a minimum wage job, you know? That's kind of what my dad always taught me. And so we kind of took that same thinking with TwitPick. We make sure we never got into debt, invested wisely, and also making sure that we are very frugal with our spending and stuff like that.
What kind of investments? What do you mean by invested wisely?
Oh, investing in an office space and or employee benefits or comforts, new equipment, stuff like that.
I see. All right, this happens. What do you say to your people? How many people were you at the time?
Ooh, 2.5 years ago. It all blurs together.
No, when you and I first talked 2.5 years ago, you were one other person. Your mom was working in the company. I think your dad was working in the company.
Yeah.
Then when Twitter made this change, you weren't more than half a dozen people, were you?
Yeah, I think we're around 6 or 7. We're around 5 right now. So still a very, very small team. And I'm impressed with how much the team has accomplished. I'm very proud of them and how well we work together. Very, very efficient. And it's like a really, you know, close group of friends basically working together. And there's no corporate structure at all, since really having a corporate structure at this size would be, you know, stupid.
I don't know. A lot of people would have, actually. They would have seen that revenues went up. They would have brought in a big team. They would have looked for ways to double down, triple down, and keep on growing in the photo sharing app. They might have even thought to take on Twitter with better photos than Twitter, with better photo sharing. But one thing that I noticed is, in addition to you holding back on crazy spending, the other thing I noticed is traffic has gone down. In fact, I'm looking at Compete, and it seems like in October of last year, October 2011, you had roughly 4.5, maybe 5 million people a month on the site. And according to Compete, I know it's not completely accurate, it's this month dipping down below 2 million.
Yeah, so what you're not seeing there is this. Like I said, when Twitter did their functionality, and also another feature that Twitter launched too is the gallery functionality and the inline photo viewing. When you
right,
click on
so site. People aren't coming to your site.
Yes.
Right.
Because our page views translated to API hits. And so people are still engaging with TwitPick, but just in a different manner. So that's why services like Compete and Alexa don't track that. So it looks like our traffic has gone down and page views have gone down, but they translated to API calls. And we're, you know, like I said, we would rather be the vine that grows on the tree than nothing at all, you know?
Yeah, and I have seen people use Topsy, different reporters use Topsy and other services to figure out how many shares were going on with each of the different photo sharing apps. But the reason that I bring this up is because you're ad-based. When Twitter shows inline a photo that was taken with your app and is posted on your site, they show it on their site, there's no ad that goes with it, there's no revenue.
Correct. And you know what? We're fine with that. And thankfully, we built our site in a way where I'm just happy that people are using it, that we're integrated into the platform, and that, you know, TwitPick is still a big player on, you know, in a world market of photo sharing and the events that happen.
Why is that useful? Help me understand it. Not because I just don't, I feel like I would be pissed if that happened. I know you're a religious person. Is it okay for me to say pissed?
Yeah.
Are you a religious person?
Yeah.
You are, right? So I'll tell you, I was frustrated. If I were in your place and suddenly saw that I was getting all these API calls, my photos were being put on Twitter, but nothing coming back to my site, no revenue coming in, I'd be upset. Now, I may not show it in this interview because I'd want to be friends with Twitter because I was hosted on their platform and so on, but I'd be upset. Is there any benefit that I'm missing here that you're seeing for all these API calls?
I mean, we can collect stats and analytics on the kind of traffic that's coming to the site. And what we did is we engineered a really nifty back end to help keep our bandwidth costs down when that happened. So even though the ad revenue potential went down, our costs went down as well, just from some cool thinking we did on our end. As far as pissed, no, not pissed. I'm just happy that we're being used. And I was watching the Katy Perry documentary last night, like the little documentary about her life, you know, and they were showing like as they were falling around with cameras, little tweet boxes that showed up, like a tweet she posted out, and one of the tweets had a TwitPick link in it. And, you know, I was just sitting on my couch and I'm thinking, wow, that's you know, we built something that's been used worldwide on in many spectacular events and many people's lives. And it's just, I, you know, you kind of have to step out of your cave or tunnel sometimes to kind of see the big picture. I'm just so happy and thankful for that and for the history that we have behind it.
All right. This, as I said, came up in middle of 2011. Middle of the previous year, you announced something called Hilo. It's kind of like hello, but it's Hilo, H-E-E-L-L-O. So this is way before Twitter was partnering up with your competitor. Why did you launch it back then?
Well, yeah, we launched it in August 2011.
Right, but August 2010, you had it under wraps. I think you did a blog post. Why even start building this thing? And it wasn't until a year later, a couple of months after Twitter started to use your competitor, that you brought it out to the world. But why launch it so early?
Right. So actually, when we announced Hilo in 2010, the original product for Hilo was completely different. It was actually going to be a product based around email and more laptop. Keep going, Dim. Sorry. More kind of focused on business users, so to speak, you know. And so we kind of set in that idea for a year, because basically we launched the company name. It's a completely separate entity from TwitPick. And then as time went on, you know, we liked the idea a lot, but it just wasn't as exciting as, you know, some of the stuff in the social scene, you know. So we kind of got bit by that bug with TwitPick. We changed our product idea when the announcements came in mid-2011 about Twitter coming out with their own product. And so we kind of thought, well, why don't we just build something we really want to build and try it out, you know. So we actually built the first version of Hilo literally in around 2 months, 2.5 months. Our team did an amazing job because we really, really rushed it out the door. And the reason why we rushed it out the door, there was a potential contractual issue that could have affected us launching Hilo if a certain event had happened. I can't really get any more details on that, but that event didn't happen, so we pushed out the door anyways. And so we kind of missed or didn't add a lot of the features we want to add. But the underlying platform is the same that we're using now. And so we actually, when we launched Hilo in August 2011, we actually did 1 million users in 2 weeks. We're averaging about 100,000 new users a day. And so we saw a great response and got a lot of great, you know, feedback and data around it. And that kind of brings us to what we've been working on for the past 6 months with the new Hilo. So the environment with Twitter and its developers has been changing over the past, you know, year and a half. And I understand why. I mean, Twitter has over, what, 500 million in funding now. And, you know, their model for revenue is advertising. And so I can understand why they're locking that down.
I want to tell the story a little bit more slowly, if you don't mind, because I want to get every bit of it. So I understand. Sure. Before, you weren't looking to create a Twitter-type site. You were thinking, hey, let's find an easier way for people to communicate using email, and you had this vision, but there was no urgency about it. So you said, I'm going to launch it, but you didn't really launch it. You were just tinkering with it. And
right. It was kind of like you said, we launched the company, the name, the brand, and we had an idea for a product that we were going to toy around with. But the more we sat on it, it's like it just didn't really excite you. You know, you kind of have to feel it in your gut. And fast forward to, you know, 2011, that's when we kind of got the idea for what Hilo is now.
And that's when you said, contractually, we have to launch this quickly, and because Twitter is in our space, we might want to create an alternate platform in case we can't use their platform in the future, or who knows what could happen, right?
Sure. And my experience has been solely in TwitPick and social apps, so we've got a lot of experience with doing that, a lot of experience with scaling, so we thought, well, why not use these skills to build something that we kind of had, like, as a toying around with a fun idea for a while, but, you know, just spitballing about it.
Okay. All right. So you launch it quickly. What was missing from it?
The UI was really missing a lot of, like, the features you want to add, one of which was the mobile apps that I launched, and the check-in functionality is one of the differentiations.
You originally wanted to have check-in also?
Yes. We actually had the data there, but really a check-in is kind of pointless if you don't have a mobile app, because, you know, if you check in from your computer, you're going to be in the same spot. So, and that's kind of morphed a little bit. And since then, so our mobile apps are about, let's say, 70 to 80% done. The new website itself is around the same percentage done. We've been using the new version internally. So the goal is to let users share what they're doing and what we've identified as, like, the four most common ways or pieces of data to share: text, photo, video, and location, or check-in, you know?
You launched it. I remember being on there. You were on there. I think your dad was on there too, right?
On Heal, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. Your dad was there. He was chatting with people. I was there. I was following you. I remember Michael Arrington, the day that you launched this, he said in the comments of TechCrunch, I just got at Michael Arrington. There were a lot of people in there, and I remember you being on there that day trying to get the conversation going, but it didn't fully coalesce, right? People weren't chatting with each other. At that point, you just pull away because you said, hey, I tried this idea. It wasn't there. I'll wait and see if there's fire in me or fire in the universe for this before I go back.
No, so what it was, like, I kind of stopped using the site because it wasn't really useful for me yet. You know, that's a good indicator. If you yourself aren't using the site or the product you built, then something's wrong, you know? Because at the time, the core functionality wasn't enough to differentiate itself from Twitter. And also, the need wasn't really there as much as it is now because of the environment changing. So kind of took a step back and, you know, kind of really locked down what are we trying to build here and what are the key features that I want to do. And so for the past, you know, 6 to 8 months, we've been, you know, working on this new Hilo, a simplified UI. We posted some screenshots on the blog. And also kind of helping the app stay, make it sticky, which one of the key things is a mobile app. If you can't take it with you, then it's not useful, you know? So especially with how mobile is exploding over the past few years, and they're going to overtake, you know, everything else by like 2014 or 2015. So same plan kind of in place, but we just didn't execute it right then and there, you know? One of my favorite quotes that I heard someone say, I forgot, I think it was the LinkedIn founder, I'm not for sure. They said, if you're not embarrassed by your first version of your product, then you launch too late, you know? And we believe in getting the core product out and then iterating.
Though you didn't iterate. You weren't. Here's the thing. I remember even from our first interview. By the way, before I even go into that, I'm sensing a different Noah in this conversation. I feel like maybe the world has burned you a little bit. Like with the photo licensing deal, the tech world came down on you with with Twitter going with your competitor. I feel like there's a more cautious Noah sitting in front of me right now. Is that happening? Are you feeling that way?
I mean, we've definitely gone through some things, like with the deal of saying that we're selling users' photos, and that was a big eye-opener for me because our intention was not to sell photos, and we weren't taking any money for users' photos. We were such a small company, and basically we were finding that celebrity photos were being distributed or taken off the site. Obviously, if not with their permission and stuff like that, and used in very irreputable or reputable means, you know. Mm-hmm. So we used the company to who has the department, the legal department, stuff like that, to track down who's doing this and say, hey, stop doing this, you know, and give a means to get those photos and stuff like that. But like I said, you know, we never took money for photos, you know, selling photos at all.
Was there any plan to take money?
No, mm-hmm. No, never. What sucks is what I found out is, you know, we had to change our terms of service to make that feasible, and then we just got ripped apart, and which made me realize that even though your intentions may be good, what's being portrayed, you know, the blogs will pick up on it, and the users will pick up on it too, you know. So we posted a blog post that said, your data is yours, we're not selling your photos and stuff like that, you know. But when stuff like that gets out on the web, you know, it kind of goes around like wildfire. So yeah, definitely a learning experience. Like I said, been the best business school, trial by fire. As far as a different Noah, I hope that's just age. I was, 24 when I last interviewed with you, I think?
I guess so.
25. And I just turned 28, so.
Turned 28, so you would have been 25, 26 maybe.
Okay, yeah. As far as being more cautious, I think so. Not as naive as I used to be, and not saying that naivety is a bad thing. Just, you know, understanding what we're responsible for and how we should portray things to make sure that we're not, making people think one thing and really our intentions have been good, you know?
So going back to what I was saying about that first interview, I remember you being a guy who, before TwitPic, was just tinkering around. Just trying a bunch of different things. I'm looking to see where some of them are. There was EchoPic became TwitPic. Before that, you had something else. It was just you testing out ideas. Was that what was going on with Hilo, where you said, hey, I'll put this out there? You tested it out. The world wasn't enthused. You weren't enthused about it to keep tinkering. And so you didn't put it out there to see what people thought and then iterated. You just said, hey, there's not that much enthusiasm. I got other stuff going on here with TwitPic. I better focus on TwitPic.
Yeah, well, one of the things too is, you know, it's trying to run two companies and two products with such a small team. You have to learn where to put your focus. And so a lot of it was, you know, we launched Hilo, we got, you know, 1 million users in 2 weeks, and then we saw, okay, well, people aren't really sticking around, and so we had to identify that and kind of take a step back and see why am I not using it all the time, and why are they not, you know, sticking around to use the product. And so obviously identified the mobile apps as one of the key aspects. And then thankfully, kind of seeing over the next, you know, 6 months, kind of seeing how the new trends in the web and stuff like that, and kind of like, well, why don't we adopt those for the new version? So, plus, also trying to keep Flippit running smoothly as we were scaling and keeping our bandwidth costs down, stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a mix of a lot of things.
And you've got HelpMint, another site going up that launched a few months ago that you need to keep that going and growing with your customers.
Yeah, so HelpMint kind of born out of, backstory. I had the chance to meet Tony Hsieh from Zappos right when I first started TwitPic, and got the tour of the office and hang out with them for a couple of days. And I was so blown back by their big emphasis on customer service. And one of the things he said, he didn't care what they were selling in 20 or 30 years, whether it be shoes or airline tickets. He wanted Zappos to be known as a brand with great customer service. That kind of stuck with me. And we wanted to implement that with TwitPic, you know, trying to respond as quickly as possible to users and with our support system. We found some of the support systems we use were kind of clunky and bloated and kind of more geared towards a corporate mindset or that, you know, structure. And so we identified that that support with the user is just a conversation, it's communication, you know. So, and users don't care about ticket numbers or issue IDs. So we thought, well, let's build HelpMint out internally, use it and see why don't we productize it. So with HelpMint, there's no ticket numbers. It's just a conversation stream with the user. You can talk via Twitter, via traditional email, or SMS, you know. Traditional email support's very formal, you know. When conversations on Twitter, which are shorter, and also SMS are short, so they're not as formal. So we aggregate wherever those messages come from the user into a single conversation stream. And instead of using terms like we have like needs action, responded, and closed, you know, kind of more human terms and a very simple user interface. We've got a couple thousand beta users on it right now, and we'll hopefully kind of push that out more later this year as we get some of the new features implemented.
Yeah, you are right about the formality of customer support email. You know, if you had trouble and walked into an Apple store, I see Apple behind you, so I'll use them as an example, and you said, hey, I have trouble. And they said, oh, Mr. Everett, good sir, please come over here and fill out this form. You go, dude, I'm freaking out over here, and you're giving me this corporate treatment here,
right?
And that's what I hate to even bring this up because I know I'm guilty of it because of the software I use. When you email me about a problem that you have, you don't just get an email back saying don't worry, I'll take care of it. You get an email back that says don't worry, I'll take care of it, but surrounded by all this corporate techie stuff like don't write below this line or else it won't get seen. Why should a user not be able to write anywhere in an email? And a ticket number, what the hell is the number going to do me? You know, I don't need a case number. That's something that the DMV should give me.
Yeah. Users don't care how their issue's fixed. They just want it fixed as quickly as possible and be treated like a human, you know?
Right. And when you start giving them ticket numbers instead of hiding it, but show that as one of the first things that people see above their answer, when you frame things that way, it just creates an impersonal barrier that no natural language in the email that goes back and forth can overcome. It just stays that corporate ease.
And users kind of have a natural animosity or distrust to internet support or companies like that because they've been so burned by bad customer service or bad support. They feel like they need to be angry or aggressive to get a response. But once you respond to them in a human way and they know they're really talking to a person, you know, it kind of brings that guard down. There was a study done at MIT with robotics. And when a user was talking to a robot that had no really human expressions, you know, with whatever they did, they had no empathy for the robot. Now, if they put, you know, expressions on the robot like a fake mouth, fake eyes, and made simulated emotion, the user had empathy with the robot. And so, kind of taking that same metaphor of, you know, let them know you're talking to a human being and be a human being and be real, you know. Don't be so, like I said, formal.
Yeah, right. And now we've got real human beings who are answering emails, but we're surrounding them in this robotic, emotionless package. All right, so that's Help Mint, which is a product that you launched a few months ago. You've got Hilo, which we talked about. I'm wondering why. Why do this? I know when I talked to Jason Fried of 37 Signals and asked him why he started creating products, he said, I believe it was, we were in a consulting, which is very labor intensive. You get paid per hour. And we wanted to create a product where it wasn't just about our sweat, but it was about the results that we were selling people. I did a bad job of explaining it, but I'm wondering why you need products when you've got TwitPick.
Man, I tell you what, it probably stands back. When I was a kid, I loved Legos. I'd sit on the floor, dump the bucket out, and spend hours, watching Saturday morning cartoons and just building things with Legos. I like building things. I like taking on new challenges. And honestly, I can't think of anything else I would want to be doing than building new products and trying to identify problems that I'm having or someone else is having, fill that need. It's fun. And despite the challenges and sometimes the hardship of it, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. And so, because to me, it's not really work, when you find something you really want to do. And also, I see the impact we can have on a global scale for good things on the platform of the internet. And that's kind of with Hilo, too. We want to provide an open communication platform for everybody. I think, freedom of speech is a human right. And a lot of people don't have that from a government level, And so we want to be able to provide a platform for that to happen.
What's your process for creating these products? In fact, let's take a step back with Help Mint, and I want to spend more time on Hilo than I have been so far. With Help Mint, how do you know? Well, I know you created a product that scratched your own itch, but how do you then know that it answers other people's issues and that you haven't created something that only you understand how to use because you've been so deep into it, but one that that answers other people's issues and is easy for them to use? What I mean is, how are you getting customer feedback on it in the beginning?
So one of the first ones we did is we put my mom on it. My mom, she runs, customer service still. And
she's TwitPick Mom on Twitter.
TwitPick Mom. Yeah, I think her title is, I have my bio. It says founder of TwitPick. And then my mom on her bio is founder of Noah Everett. So she's
got a sense of the founder of TwitPick.
But she does customer service. And my mom and dad aren't, tech savvy. So what we did is, kind of built the product and put my mom on it. And she understood it, and it flowed for her. So that was step one. So it was okay, it makes sense from an interface standpoint. And as we were using it internally and knew it worked for us, we kind of went out and kind of showed it to people who would need a product or use a customer service product. And once they, saw they were getting excited about it and said, yes, I would definitely use this, I kind of thought, well, why don't we, put this out and productize it?
I see. And then when you put it out there and productize it, who do you show it to first?
Well, basically, we got a beta list set up, and so basically had like a few hundred people sign up for the beta. We released it, emailed them, got them on board, basically made it say, try it out, use it. It's free to use for the first agent, so there's really no cost associated with it. Have any questions or issues or feedback, email us, and that's kind of how we've been doing that when we first launched it. Tweeted out some blog posts, stuff like that, so we haven't really done any formal marketing, so to speak.
Okay. Anything surprise you when you took it out to show it to people who weren't your mom, who didn't know your issue?
Great feedback. And then users will also find bugs that, you'll never find yourself, which is great. That's why you want people on your product. Or features that we never really thought of,
What blew your mind when they looked at the product?
One of the things I know we had to fix was making them understand how to get your account set up properly. So we're like, well, obviously users are not going to know what to do if you just dump them into the product. You're going to need to have some sort of tutorial or guide them to get their product set up.
All right, right. The onboarding process, you said, we created a product that's easy to use, but no, the audience or the customers needed an onboarding process to make sure that they understood how easy it was to use.
Right. And it's always like that last 20% of the product usually takes just as long as the first 80%. It's just all little small details that you don't think about when you're building the core product, like the tutorial screens or the blank slate screens and stuff like that, you know, things you don't really think about until you get users on it and getting that feedback of where it's breaking down for them.
What about building it when you already have a product that you're focusing on? How did you structure your team, as small as it is, so that you can build this new product, get user feedback, answer customer complaints, improve the product while you're still doing other things?
So we kind of get a product like TwitPic to a point where it's stable and basically kind of put it in maintenance mode, where all we got to do to keep the site viable is to keep it up and running, keep it efficient, and that's basically it. And so with the platform, we had a lot of scaling issues early on with TwitPic because it was just me. I had no idea how to scale, you know. Finally, we've locked our platform down now where we can scale fairly easy, and it's not a challenge like it used to be, even though our traffic is many, 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 many times over what it used to be back in the day. So that helps that product solid now, and really there's no more features to really add without creating a bloated product, you know. So we put the product in maintenance mode, basically, if you want to use that term, and then we can go off and start building our new products. What we do in iterations. So we start with iteration 0, which is what's the core product, and iteration 1, then 2, 3, 4, et cetera. And we track that in Basecamp and stuff like that. And everybody kind of has their own little niche that they're good at, whether it be front end or back end or server setup and stuff like that.
I see. And how, you know what, actually? I was going to ask so many questions about that, but I'd love to do at some point an interview just on how you launched HelpMint. I want to know how someone who has an internal problem can create a product that doesn't just solve their problem, their unique problem, in a unique way that only they understand, but create something that translates to, that other people understand, that becomes a product that many other people use and buy. All right, so let's go back to Hilo.
Yeah.
I understand the main idea. I understand why you launched. In fact, tell me a little bit more about why you launched it.
So it was kind of just us thinking beyond TwitPic. You know, so TwitPic, we want to keep it integrated with Twitter. The branding is associated with it. The commenting system's hooked into it. We didn't really want to break that experience, you know. So we locked ourselves in with Twitter. We do have Facebook post capabilities too for that. But we're kind of thinking on a broader scale of what would we want in a platform. And so, you know, we built the first version of Hilo. And then during that time, the developer community, it's been changing between Twitter and developers a little bit, because they want to lock that platform down in their experience, which we understand why, you know, because they got to make money, keep the lights on. But it's still, you know, the developer is still getting the short in the deal on that, you know. So for the past 6 months, we've been working on this new Hilo, which basically our goal is to create an open, real-time communication platform that has a really friendly developer community that developers can build on, where there's really, they can build their own clients, any functionality, and there's just a simple set of rules. Basically, all the rules are saying that, you know, don't do anything to harm the user, you know, don't trick the users, don't sell or steal their data kind of thing. And other than that, you know, have at it. And so we're taking a hybrid approach on the revenue models. I personally, like, advertising is kind of, I've used that for TwitPic, and, you know, it pays the bills, but I'm not a fan of that model anymore, you know, because obviously advertisers don't have your users' best interest in mind. They have their clients' best interest in mind, you know, and so that the visions don't align. So with Hilo, we're going to have a hybrid approach where there will be an ad model, but the ads will be organic and native to the site, so it won't be intrusive, and it also will be managed by us, a self-serve ad system, so that way you can have a very, very high standard of the ads that come on the site. And then two, a pro option, a pro account will be a small monthly or yearly fee, and basically you get no ads, a pro badge, maybe early access to other features, and we're still working on some cool features to give to users for a pro account. You know, the internet's kind of been driven by freemium and stuff like that, but nothing is really free, so to speak. You know, you've got email, which people think, well, that's free. Well, you know, there's ads in Gmail and Yahoo and stuff like that, and Twitter or in Facebook. You know, advertising is you're the product, so to speak. So,
so you're gonna go hybrid. You want to get rid of the ads and have some other benefits, pay a fee, and you got a pro account. You don't, we'll run some ads against you, nothing too invasive, and you'll get to experience the product on whatever platform, whatever tool you want, because we're going to make Hilo into a very developer-friendly environment.
And then on the with the developers, we're going to try to work out a way to where if we do show ads through their app, that we can somehow do a rev share program with the developers. That way your interests are aligned, you know. So, because, I mean, Twitter was built on the back of a very huge developer community, and I don't think Twitter would be as large as it is right now, or as quickly at least, without the developer community.
And they couldn't stay up. Would they be able to stay up and keep the photos active the way that you kept the photos up?
I mean, I'm not for sure. I mean, I know they have scaling issues up front like we did too, you know. I don't know.
What do you think of app.net, Dalton Caldwell's idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think I saw that come out about a few months ago when he launched it, and it kind of, like, I was happy to see it because it kind of validated what we're trying to do with Hilo as well, you know. And users, you know, should have options to use, and so our approach is a little bit different than what Dalton's doing. Right now there's a pure pay model, and we're going to try to take a hybrid approach where it's a free account too, because there's going to be users that may be in third world countries or that don't have the means to pay for an account. And we don't want to leave them out of the service, you know, and also help developers build on a platform where there's a lot more user-based potential.
What about the idea that you're creating a destination site, and it seems like he's not looking to create a destination?
Right? Yeah, from what I understand, I think his goal is kind of to build it's a platform, if I understand correctly, for platform developers to build on. It's not so much a consumer product, if I'm getting it right. But I still think it's along the same lines of what we're trying to accomplish too, of, you know, alternatives for users and developers to use, you know. Look at how many micro economies have been set up on these platforms of Facebook, you know, and Twitter, that allows developers like us and other developers, you know, to make a business and to make a viable business where we're making enough money to, you know, have a company.
He has a lot of the technorati as users of his stuff, as fans of his personally, and it seems like you don't have that audience specifically, but you have a broader audience. Like, even on Twitter, you have 4.5 million people on Twitter.
Right. Yeah, followers.
Followers, right.
It helped validate it on our end too, to see, well, you know, these are like you said, the technorati. If they're on board with it, that means there's a need there, you know. And what's funny is, like, when we launched Hilo last year, we got mixed reviews. Some were like, well, it's just a Twitter clone and blah blah blah, which a lot of the features did match. But it's amazing how the environment has changed in a year's time, where now, with basically what we're trying to do, is basically the same functionality with some new features, but now everybody's on board with it, you know. So it's funny how the tides change so quickly and opinions change so quickly on the blog side of things. So
yeah, it is. Now if you say, hey, we're just a plain vanilla Twitter clone, people are interested.
Yeah, because, you know, because now everybody, the blogs have been bashing Twitter for what they're doing. So it's, you know, and that's another thing to realize too, you know, you can't really go by what you read in the blogs and go by their tune, you know. It's like a flock of birds. They'll switch directions, you know, on you as quickly as possible. So
partially, I think one of the things that people are upset about is Twitter's new rules, which apparently will mean that you can't have, well, actually, what does it mean for the comments that you have under your photos? Do they have to change? Do they have to have, well, what does it mean for them?
So for us, the new change didn't really affect us on the limit side of things. So we're, like I said, we're posting into Twitter. We're not really using the API call that they're limiting to 100,000 users. And also the comments on twitpic.com, well, that's also on our site, and it's a commenting system, so that doesn't really affect us when it comes to...
And those comments go to Twitter?
Those comments do go to Twitter, yeah, from the user that posted it. So the data lives on both sides. So the tweet goes to Twitter, they control that, and then we have the comment on TwitPic, which, you know, we're not affected by the new rules with that.
I see, so you don't have to have that whole embed structure for a tweet.
Correct.
I see, okay. What else do I want to know? What did I miss? Think about the way you were a few years ago, back, let's say 3 years ago, before we even talked. You're an entrepreneur, you're building your business. What would you want to know from Noah Everett of today?
Wow.
What would you tell your old self?
I tell myself to don't sweat the small stuff, and then even when it looks so bleak or and bad, that it's going to get better, and to kind of get out that tunnel vision, you know. And I started looking at life this way. So the average American lifespan is around 80-something years. So by the average, I have about 60 years left. I live and make decisions now based off if I'm on my deathbed, looking back at my life, how am I going to feel about myself? And are the loved ones that I care about around me and stuff like that, you know? And it kind of makes the small things that you're dealing with or the issues you're dealing with then not seem so bad, you know? Because think of a really bad issue you might have had, you know, 4 or 5 years ago that was huge then, but now it's not a problem anymore, you know? It's, you know, time heals. And so I would tell myself just to, you know, stay focused. It's going to be okay. And, you know, just stay true to what you feel in your heart and your gut and don't waver from that.
It looks like you're traveling a little bit. A year ago, you went to Amsterdam. Are you dating someone now?
Yeah, dating someone here in Charleston. Yeah, I went to Amsterdam to speak at a conference there. Got a chance to meet Mark Zuckerberg's sister and hear her speak. And Amsterdam is a beautiful city. I got the tour the area. I accidentally stumbled upon the red light district unknowingly. So kind of walking around and that was a...
It is really close. It's close to the coffee shops. It's close to the main drag there in Amsterdam. Did you go in, by the way, into any of the places in the red light district?
No, I was too afraid. Not really my cup of tea. Because we obviously wasn't looking for it. And all of a sudden you walk into a street and man, there it is, you know? So,
you know what? I wouldn't have believed it if I just heard it, but that is pretty much what it is. You're just walking around and suddenly there are women in the windows. Yeah. You don't need to go in for the action. There are women in the windows. The whole the whole concept is freaky. Yeah. What state has women just standing in the windows like that?
Yeah, especially for a guy like me that grew up in a conservative home and stuff like that. You know, it's a different world. And I love Amsterdam. It's a beautiful city, beautiful people, and just a
great. What do you do for fun? What do you do when you're not working?
Like boating. Obviously, Charleston right here on the water. I don't own a boat yet, but I'd like to buy one hopefully eventually and get into boating and. Living downtown Charleston now, just enjoying the historic city, and we had a huge amount of rain yesterday from Hurricane Isaac, so a little bit of flooding, but that's gone now. Playing Xbox, still love video games.
When you see that Instagram gets purchased for $1 billion by Facebook, what do you think?
Man, I was excited. I was actually, to see a site like that be purchased for that amount of money, it was great. It validated TwitPic again, you know, to let that, you know, it's not a photo sharing, video sharing, it's not a dying space, you know, so I thought it was great, and I think anybody else in the photo sharing space would have been probably thinking the same thing too.
What did you learn from the way that Instagram built their business? I know that you've got filters on your app. I actually saw Katy Perry use a couple of your filters, I think.
That's a funny story behind the filters. So like I said, you know, Instagram was basically a mobile app, you know, and then with a website behind it, we early on took a different approach. We were a website and then we kind of go with a mobile app. So we had to shift our thinking to say, well, we should have a mobile app. We've been working on our mobile app for TwitPic for since 2011. The filters was actually a side thought. I think we added the filters within about a week of launching as a quick side note. And why don't we just do that and see if users want it? Because we've been getting requests from users to have a filtering aspect. And so, well, we'll give them what they want and they love it. And we can also post video natively from the apps as well.
What else do I want to know? Here's another question. One of the things that all the bloggers picked up on in our last interview is that you had an offer for 8 figures. I asked you a little over 10 million minimum. You said well over 10 million.
Yeah.
Do you regret not taking that deal back then?
Not at all. Because we've still had offers we bought out in the years since. No, I don't regret it at all because, you know, it's been a school for me to be running companies like this, and it's fun to run a company. I think entrepreneurs shouldn't build companies to have the end result be bought or sold. You know, they should build companies to build something that's sustainable and to build something that's solving a need or a problem. No, don't regret it at all. Financially, everything's been great, and so...
Revenue financially, $150,000 a month, roughly?
I haven't checked recently. Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah,
somewhere around there. All right. What did you think of the first interview? You're a guy who's done the interview, and you're back. What's the impact for you? I know what the impact is for the audience.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was definitely nervous. The funny thing is, since then, I didn't think it was going to get as big as it did. And I've met probably 20, 30 people that I've met at conferences or in Charleston or wherever, you know, I have no awareness to meet. Just, oh yeah, I saw you in that Mixergy interview. And so I was like kind of taken aback at how you know, people watching this and picking up on, you know. So, I mean, I'm a computer nerd. I'm kind of introverted, and so, you know, I don't really get out a whole lot in these kind of things. So, response was great. Very glad I did it, and it's honored that you asked me again to be on. When I got the email from you to do it again, I was like, sweet, yeah, of course I'll do it.
Oh, cool, and I know this won't be the last time. I'm looking forward to getting to know you over the years, and sure, hopefully at some point we'll get to see each other in person.
Yeah, well, you're on the East Coast now, too, so we're not too far from each other.
No, not far at all. Well, cool, bud. Thank you for doing this interview. Thank you all for being a part of it. And you know what? I'm on Hilo. I actually have Andrew Warner as my name there. If you guys are on Hilo, go over to it. Add me, first of all. Let me get some good followers quickly, or listeners.
Yeah.
And second, just say something to me and say something to Noah. I want to hear who's out there and see you guys at least interact with what Noah's built. I think that's the best way to get a sense of what the product is. I do my best, Noah, in these interviews to give people an understanding of what the product does. But sometimes 5 seconds of playing with the product gives you way more understanding than an hour of me yapping about it.
Yeah, and I think also users should keep in mind the version that's up right now is still the old Hilo, and the new
version. I'm going to publish this after the new version comes out so people see it for real.
Right.
You're going to publish it when? What date?
We don't have a set date. We're going to try to get a preview of it out here in the next month.
All right, so maybe we'll publish before.
Yeah.
All right, well, guys, check it out. Hilo, HEELLO.com. Go check out the site. Say hello. Add both of us. Say hello. And look. And if you see Noah at a conference, say hi there, too.
You can check out new.hilo.com and kind of see the preview of the new version as well.
Good point. All right. Thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks, Andrew.